This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Rich Bradbury. It's 12.03, coming up to 12.04 on the 18th of October. It's a Friday. Today, I'm in the studio with...
Audrey Raj.
Arvini Braj.
Oh, welcome back, Arvini
Braj.
Hello. And, of course, our producer, Christine Wong. Say hello, Christine.
Yo.
Where have you been, Arvini Braj, you dirty little stop out?
Vacationing somewhere.
Vacationing? Where exactly were you vacationing?
In Singapore, so not vacationing.
I was saying that's not a vacation.
Yeah, no. No, working in Singapore. Covering the Web in Travel event that they have every year. Mm-hmm. So a lot of tech travel companies come down there, and it's super interesting. Every single year I go, it's very interesting with new people doing new things in the travel tech space.
You must have been slumming it while you were down there, right?
Yeah.
And Marina Bay?
At Marina Bay, yeah.
Slumming it, absolutely.
Tough life.
Tough life indeed, Arvin. Right, today's topic of conversation. Are we preparing students enough to be part of the gig economy? Interesting topic, stuff we've kind of touched upon before. Of course, gig economy is something we like to talk about quite a lot here on the show. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is because that could well be the future of employment. As much as we might or might not like it, we've got to learn to live with it. And by learning to live with it, we've got to understand it. To understand it, you've got to learn it. Mm-hmm. See how it goes around cyclically? Mm-hmm. Right, so that's the story we're going with, and the story we're running with all the way throughout the show. If you want to comment and add some tweets, some messages, whatever, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number. Twitter or Instagram, we're at BFM Radio. What are you talking about then? Who's Generation Z? Who's that?
So that's my story. I'm going to be talking about how the Gen Zs, they don't always want to hear from you. They don't always want to be reachable.
That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And Arvin, you're talking about what?
How Supreme's burner phone is practically useless, but it sold out in seconds on their store.
Bought by Hypebeasts.
Hypebeasts. Is what they're called.
Right, okay. Mm. Start off with the story then about preparing students enough to be part of the gig economy. Back in 2012, this lady called Diana Mulcahy, she was a lecturer in the MBA program at Babson College in Massachusetts. She created a course called Entrepreneurship and the Gig Economy. The idea was to teach MBA students how to get contract work, line up side hustles, negotiate fees, and market themselves in a new kind of labor market where the flexibility afforded to freelancers, part-timers, and independent contractors were suddenly being embraced by a new generation of workers. So this is 4 years into Uber's launch, as that was starting to work. And she says that the advice that she started to give to her students was stop looking for a job. And, of course, most of them went, what? Hmm. And that's because, of course, things have changed rapidly. She talks about how essentially there are three reasons why you should stop looking for jobs and actually start looking for work, right? So number one is that the first is that full-time jobs are disappearing. The private sector used to create and add full-time jobs to the economy at a rate of around 2 to 3% per year. In 2000, though, during the dot-com crash, that rate fell below 2%. In 2008, the rate of job creation fell even further to below 1%. This, of course, is in the US. And it's young businesses, not small businesses, as is widely believed, that create the most new jobs. And the growth of new young businesses is at a historically low level. And the businesses that do start are creating fewer jobs. That's because you don't need so many people if they're all young and they're all working outside of an office, right? So instead of creating jobs, companies are increasingly moving work from jobs. There are fewer full-time journalist jobs available anymore, for instance, but there's plenty of freelance reporting work. Mm-hmm. Makes sense, right? So the advice she gives to students is to look for plentiful work and not increasingly scarce jobs. The second reason she tells the students to stop looking for work is that full-time employees are becoming the worker of last resort. So instead of preferring full-time employees, many firms are now actively avoiding full-time employees and look for ways to build their business models and run their firms with as few full-time employees as possible. Full-time employees are the most expensive, least flexible source of labor. You have to provide benefits and protection only to full-time employees. They cost significantly more, around 30 to 40% more than a gig or a freelancer. Now, employees won't disappear entirely. There'll always be a need for like the small core groups, like your CEOs and your HRs and one thing or another. So the best strategy she's giving these students now is that they can prepare themselves to be independent workers and not full-time employees, something we've discussed. Third reason is that it's clear that traditional work isn't working for most people. Job security no longer exists, and the good wages, generous benefits, and secure retirement that used to be guaranteed with full-time employment are in decline or have disappeared. Now, listen to this little poll from Gallup. 70% of Americans aren't engaged and don't enjoy their jobs. Meanwhile, in contrast to a McKinsey survey, more than 8,000 workers found that independent workers are more satisfied with nearly every aspect of their working lives than employees. 74% of them are happy with what they're doing.
Hmm. That's not surprising, though.
At all.
Right? Because it comes down to the flexibility. It comes down to, you know, you being your own boss, you choosing when to work, when not to work. And, yep. You know, just the kind of work that you do, it's all on you.
So before, if we've kind of had this discussion before that freelancing for most people was supplemental to their full-time gig. You know, yep. You wanted a bit of extra cash. So you went out and you did whatever it is that you do. You drive your Grab, you do your graphic design, you do your copywriting, whatever. And it was a little bit extra. Mm. But obviously over the last few years, people have started to choose to be freelance, to be part of that gig economy and make that their main income.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how things have switched. And so now a bunch of these universities in the US are starting to take on board these little courses where they're teaching, you know, students how to make yourself more available for the gig economy. I think what I wanted to look at today and discuss a little bit further was whether or not we're teaching the younger students how to deal with stuff like that, how to get yourself ready to be interested and available for that gig economy, like fiscal responsibility, for example. Just really simple stuff, right? Mm.
So the courses that they're teaching, is it to do with the gig economy in the sense that, you know, you can do one job this week and then take on another job next week, and then if the, let's say an event company needs people to work on their soundboard, I mean their consoles and stuff, then you can take up that job the third week? Or is the gig economy only, you know, like ride-hailing drivers or food delivery guys, or, you know, if you work with a company as a freelancer, but you are practically full-time?
Right. So there's a few different ones. Mainly, there's one called Thriving in the New World of Work.
Yep.
And what they do is they navigate a whole bunch of different workplaces and see how people who are making themselves available to freelance, they use assessments to figure out their strengths, their values, and passions in this environment, how they can be resourceful and how they can navigate uncertainty. But also, it looks at these potential gigs and the ability to say no. Mm. So, no, I don't want to be driving a car this week. You know, I want to be doing something else. And I think that mindset of being able to say, no, I can afford to do this week. I might do that next week. You know, I'm not tying myself down to one thing or another.
Yeah, which makes sense, because then they would have to teach them time management, and then they would have to teach them about how to manage their money, because that's the only way people can say no. Because if you talk to anyone who does ride hailing or food delivery or stuff, they will say they have to work maybe 12, 13 hours a day to make any sort of income that makes sense, because otherwise it's just like side income for retirees and people who can afford to take breaks.
Right.
Yeah, so these courses, I guess, have to teach them how to manage their time and money so well that they can do one job this week and then maybe like half the month, and then for the other half of the month they can do something else entirely.
But I was to quickly interject, but I was talking to Frida this morning and I said, well, if you look back at stuff like music and arts, freelancing has always been the way that you make money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go talk to those people about how they make their money.
It used to be called moonlighting, right?
Correct, it did.
But do they make money in the arts?
Comparable to a full-time job?
The struggling artist is the happiest person on the planet.
Sure.
No, they're not.
No.
More discussion about this. Let us know what you think, folks. Are we preparing students enough to be part of the gig economy? Let us know. 018-789-8899. Twitter or Instagram, we're at BFM Radio.
Binge-friendly movies. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with...
Arvind Raj.
And Audrey Raj.
With you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon, folks. We're discussing whether or not we're preparing students enough to be part of the gig economy. We've had quite a bit of feedback already. We've got some tweets. We've got some WhatsApp messages. We've got some Instagram stories. Let's have some messages from WhatsApp first with Auds.
Okay, so this is from Daphne Miranda, who says, well, already as it is, they're afraid of losing their jobs to automation. So they're more than okay with freelance or contract jobs because they themselves don't see a long career in any organization. They said their average lifespan would be around 2 to 3 years. I'm a lecturer, by the way, so I've gone through this question with my students. Oh, so this is actual feedback from students.
Brilliant. I've got a couple over on Insta story. One of our former interns, funnily enough, Michelle, has said, I think students or younger people can adapt when they graduate and start working, but... are the older generation prepared to accept their children being part of the gig economy? Good question, Michelle. Mm. Let's ask some older people out there, if you're listening.
What do you think, Rich?
Oh, you can tell wow. It's Friday, right? She's going to get it later on.
There's one more here from Eugene.
I'm going to interrupt you first. You can wait. Respect your elders. I am Kif up next. Our education system... ain't that fast. Don't make me start with regulations and policy. Okay, keep the comments coming in. Now you can go, young lady.
This is from Eugene, who would just like to say, no, we are not. Our education system is built to shape students to get a job. However, I can see a shift towards preparing youth for the gig economy in some colleges, and the youths are more self-aware, hence they would try and educate themselves to cope with the gig economy. So, you know, before I was rudely interrupted earlier by Richard Bradbury, I was about to say that I think that just because these kids, they are Gen Z moving into Gen Alpha, right? They're not the usual millennials who are more collaborative. They are the competitive generation.
Yep.
They are the ones who grew up with their parents having lots of trouble. You know, the economy was in the toilet and... they were also the generation right after 9/11, so they understand hardship, they understand suffering, and they are more competitive, they are more individualistic, so they would, I guess, be generally more inclined to just working in the gig economy, having a side hustle to begin with. So I don't know about teaching them, but I think, like what Arv said, you know, financial literacy is very important, you know, being able to manage their money and, you know, investing their money as well, you know, putting aside something from their side hustle. These are the kind of lessons. But also I have to agree with what Michelle there said, you know, because the gap between the millennial generation and the Gen Z generation, it's a drastic...
Yeah.
They're very different generations.
Different mindsets entirely.
And you know that the millennials are going to be the managers, you know, like the support system for these Gen Z in the workforce. So maybe also educate the millennials on how to manage the Gen Z and those who would be at work, have a full-time job and have a side hustle. You know, how are they going to manage that? So maybe some form of education for the millennials as well.
There was a message on WhatsApp about cost of insurance or something.
Yes. So David here says, who pays gig workers medical bills, a bypass cost? $50,000.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Of course, that's got to be part of the conversation as well. You know, people are investing in their own health insurance schemes nowadays, as well as having something provided by their full-time employer.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are people who are full-time gig economy employees or workers or whatever you want to call them, and they are paying for their own medical bills, you know, but that's just how it is.
Yeah. We also touched on this before that India is having a huge problem with this, with the gig economy workers. So a lot of people are doing this full time and earning a lot of money. It's just that they don't have a fallback and they don't have long-term plans. So a lot of young people in India do this, like the food delivery stuff and the ride hailing stuff, and they're able to even make enough money to buy property.
Mm.
But when it comes to a time where they need to think about a career, they are not able to switch or make the transition effectively.
Mm.
So long-term plans, when it comes to their medical costs, when it comes to medical insurance, when it comes to having savings, that's where they fail. And, you know, so now the government is thinking of ways to sort of make it easier for them to have a long-term career instead of thinking of short-term gain.
Right. We should probably listen to somebody who has a different opinion to us as well, or rather a similar. Let's have a listen to what he has to say. This is Eric Maltgun. He's from iTrain Kids. We asked him, how is iTrain Kids preparing its student for the gig economy?
The gig economy gives workers essentially a lot more flexibility. They have new opportunities to basically be their own business. The challenge on this, though, is you do not have the security of a long-term employment, and you need to be much craftier about, first of all, learning the skills that you need that are necessary and required in the market, and also consistently honing and developing that expertise into something that's consistently going to be in high demand. So when we look at how children learn or use a lot of their skills in the early development stage, there aren't that many great extracurricular activities that allows kids the option to really craft their intellectual and sort of problem-solving skills, you know, maybe chess or something. And that's what we look to teach through our coding and STEM classes. You know, if you give children this opportunity to build something creative, they're learning these skills and applying this knowledge. They're breaking down problems into smaller problems, solving each in turn. So it gives these kids, first of all, the very important skills of being able to solve problems, think to themselves, how do I overcome a challenge without necessarily waiting for someone to explain it to me? And also, very importantly, that sort of desire to continuously want to learn and improve their skills. And all of these are fundamental blocks to being a competitive worker in the gig economy.
Eric, how can other educators start the discussion about the gig economy with their students?
Currently in the education system, a lot of the things being taught are still being taught the same way as they were 30 years ago. And of course, the work economy has changed drastically since then. So the two areas I would focus on ways to bring about this awareness and move the conversation forward. The first is I would look at bringing much more real-world examples of work, especially, you know, from modern companies, into the education system. The more exposure we can give kids to projects that are happening or internships, real-world situations of companies, especially, again, the fast-paced, fast-moving ones, will give them a much better idea of what to expect. I think there's a bigger-than-ever problem right now of, you know, let's say, fresh graduates that come out of university and they realize that what they were taught at university is almost completely nothing to do with what they're currently being asked to do in their workplace. And the second one, project work is still very much underused in many of the education systems. And project work is essential in the gig economy, and it's essential in the workplace. So we need to be teaching our younger people much earlier on how to collaborate in a project, how to hone your own skills so that you know what you're doing, you know how you fit into the group, and you know how your specialty plugs certain gaps and elevates the whole outcome of the project. So more exposure to project work, I think, also is as necessary to be able to give the kids these skills they can then apply effectively in the gig economy.
Thank you. That was Eric Maltgen from iTrain Kids. Some interesting points there. We're going to move on very shortly, though. Of course, I want to take a break in just a second. But we're talking about, if you're only just joining us now, whether or not we're preparing students enough to be part of the gig economy. And this is because there are some universities across the states and in other places now that are providing training and preparing people to go into the gig economy and that kind of workforce. There's even one university I'm reading about here. They're called DePaul, and they have a music department, and they've helped student musicians get hired for occasions like wedding ceremonies and private parties in the Chicago area. And now that the gig work has reached other industries, been catalyzed by technology, it makes it far simpler for companies and contractors to find one another. You know, this woman who started this whole thing in 2012 says she wants her students to know that they're going to face a very different kind of workforce than what their parents faced. And that's exactly what you were saying earlier on, Ords, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking about it, right? Even today, we have some Gen Zs in the organization who they're here full time, and then they also have like a side gig. But so I think there needs to be like there's a fine line. Just say you work for LinkedIn, right? And full time, And then your side hustle is you are building another social media platform. So, you know, that there should be like non-competes in place. So, like, there are a lot of things that you need to think about when it comes to your rights as a worker in the gig economy, as an employer in the gig economy as well. You were talking earlier about the kind of employee benefits that a full-time worker has that maybe those in the gig economy don't. But in the future, you know that people are going to be fighting for their rights. You know, like, they're going to want your paternity, your maternity, your days off, your sabbatical. You're right to a sabbatical and things like that, medical, dental, mental health allowances.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, on the back of that, there's going to be entrepreneurs who'll be creating insurance companies and one thing or another that do provide all of these things that we're worrying about right now.
Yeah.
You know, that I think that's something that we know is going to happen. It's just that because we're not seeing it yet, doesn't mean it's not going to exist. Let's take a short break. 018-789-8899 is the number to get us via WhatsApp, Twitter, and Instagram. We're at BFM Radio. Short break coming up with the Cocteau Twins and Caroline's Fingers. When we come back, Generation Z doesn't always want to hear from you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.